In times of real trial, elected officials rise to the occasion.
The only way to build a thriving economy is to set and enforce firm rules of the road.
They did not do enough. There was not a whole lot of stimulus of you know, actual infrastructure.
Is hyperinflation a successful outcome of what they're trying to do?
Just realize that these people don't know what's going on.
The strong rights theory we turn to today is libertarianism.
You don't have to use fiscal stimulus or monetary stimulus. There is a third way.
We don't know how other people should live, and you cannot organize a society.
About the case for the free market, and the case for liberty, and the case against statism.
All right, all right. Welcome to my very first podcast. If you're listening this early on, I am very excited to have you. This is Christian Mullins, and this is my first podcast. I am new to this kind of system. I'm a lot more comfortable with the YouTube format, so you have to stay with me for the first couple of podcasts. It's going to be very interesting in how I adapt to the podcasting etiquette, and I guess you would call this the Christian Mullins Show. I am not familiar with the etiquette of podcasting as far as name goes, but I'm just going to go with that, the very generic, the blank insert name here show. So it's going to be the Christian Mullins Show, hopefully. That's what I've decided this one. It could change later on. But if you are here, I thank you for coming and finding me this early. My name is Christian Mullins. Let me give you a quick little background of just quick a quick understanding of who I am before I get into the main topic I wanted to discuss here. First off, first thing out of the way, I am an 18-year-old. Oh my God, yes, yes, I know. I am 18, so I'm a naive, young, ignorant drone in the schooling system as of right now. No, of course, I hope you will give me at least the initial respect and objectivism that you would give anyone else, and judge me on in your ability to watch me or listen to me and stay listening to me on my mind, not a number that represents how long I've been living. And what I do not have an experience yet, I promise you, I try my hardest to make up with knowledge and reason. All right, so what I want to discuss here is I'm taking on a very generic topic that it's always fun to do, and I'm going to be taking on the article that many people have already heard of, and it's Jon Stewart's 19 Questions for Libertarians. Many people have discussed this already, and I have listened to a couple of these, especially I've listened to Stefan Molyneux's video. If you haven't seen him on YouTube, I've seen his rebuttal to this. And I believe he's left some things out. What he does have in philosophy, he lacks in economic history, as Mises would put it. So I want to take on this and give a little bit more of a diverse perspective on these 19 questions here. And it is always fun. It is always fun to destroy the statist propaganda that spews out of the masses in the United States. So it's always fun to take on these types of questions. So let's start off right away here. So number one. Is government the antithesis of liberty? Now, of course, this is what a lot of people say, and obviously it is not by itself, and to personify government is it's metaphorical, it's an incorrect statement, because as Mises so eloquently pointed out in Human Action, only individuals can act, and they act purposely. So to say that the government can do anything, or that it is anything, and that a collective is anything, is incorrect, because only individuals can acquire traits. So no, just a quick answer is the government is not the antithesis of liberty. What is the antithesis of liberty is the initiation of force. All libertarians that are listening to this right now understand that. That is the main objection that we fight against as libertarians. And no, it is not the government. It just happens that the government has the monopoly on the initiation of force and inflicts force at the greatest magnitude of any other institution in human history. Number two, one of the things that enhances freedom are roads. Infrastructure enhances freedom, a social safety net enhances freedom. Of course, all of these enhance freedom to one party, correct? I mean, a social safety net enhances freedom, like some, you know, let's take Social Security. Right now, Social Security enhances freedom for elderly, the elderly, but when I'm paying into it currently, when I'm 65, it's going to be bankrupt and not available to me. So just on the surface, it's a hypocritical statement. Anything, as Henry Hazlitt pointed out, anything that happens, you have to look at the unseen. And obviously, when you're giving anything away for free, there's an opportunity cost. Someone is paying for that. So no, directly that does not enhance freedom, because you are taking money using force to pay for these projects. But again, an overwhelming principle is this, is that we, as libertarians, we don't hold freedom up as a god. The reason we love freedom is not because that we just think that we want, you know, savage animals to be running the streets. We believe that freedom is the most moral. So morality is what our focus is as libertarians, not freedom in itself. Number three, what should we do with the losers that are picked by the free market? Now, I love the wording that he decides to use here, picked by the free market. From Thursday's perspectives, and they've been, you know, growing up in the propaganda mills, that there's always someone dictating. There's always someone, as Tom Woods always puts it, with a bullhorn that dictates who does what, and they plan it out. A free market, no one is picked, because you don't pick. There's no winners and losers directly picked that we deem that you are wrong and that you are right. What happens in the free market is you provide a product or service or good, and if the service is beneficial to the majority and your demand is high enough, you will be able to be in business. If the service you're providing is not helping the society, you will be a quote loser, and you will, you know, run, you have to switch to a service that is more profitable and has a higher demand and higher need from the society. So the free market is, it's a win-win situation. I mean, it's a praxeological law that voluntary action between two parties, at least in the ex ante, is beneficial, and obviously in the current state. So obviously you can look for a year from now and say, okay, I should have probably not did podcasting, right? Because it'd be an utter failure, right? But at the moment, it is benefiting me. So in the moment, the reason you were trading something is because your value scales are inverted, and therefore it is a win-win at all times, at least in the ex ante sense. So losers picked by the free market are not losers. They've just not been able to provide a product that is beneficial to society that they deem is worthy. So yeah. Number four, do we live in a society or don't we? Or are we a collective? Everybody's success is predicated on the hard work of all of us. No one gets there on their own. Why should it be that the people who lose are hung out to dry for a group that doesn't believe in evolution? It's awfully Darwinian. I don't know who told John Stewart that libertarians don't believe in evolution. I didn't know that libertarianism is a Christian movement. So I mean that is completely ridiculous. Just on the surface of that endpoint, it's kind of an irrelevant point. And all of these, we live in a society, sure. Everyone's success is predicated on the hard work of all of us. No one gets their own. Obviously, we are not, individualist and isolationist to the point where everyone should live on a separate island. We believe that human interaction is what creates prosperity. You know, it allows specialization, the division of labor, for people to produce most efficiently and have the, prosperity in an economy and society. So, yes, we all live in a society. The question is the society forced or voluntary? If you're going to force someone to pay for roads, pay for this, then that is immoral. You're using force. It's not a society. Society is everything that is voluntary. To just say that society is, you cannot, people do this all the time. They equate society to the government. The government is not us, as Rothbard pointed out in The Anatomy of the State, that we are not the government. They are a separate entity of us. They are the antithesis of what society is. They are everything that is force. It is their only choice but to use force. The society is everything you can change, everything that is voluntary in your life. So yes, we believe in a society. We just believe there should be voluntarism in that. Number five, in a representative democracy, we are the government. We have work to do, and we have a business to run, and we have children to raise. We elect you as representatives to look after our interests within a democratic system. Oh my goodness, I love this kind of concept. We are not the government. We are not the government. They are a separate entity. And it's, I mean, we elect you as our representatives to look after our interests? They do not. How backwards of a matrix do you need to live in to believe that they are accountable and that they look after our interests? Do we have a contract with them, as we would in a libertarian anarcho-capitalist society where the rule of contract prevails? No. They are bought and sold by interest groups, and that is who they follow. That is who they are accountable for. Well, our reaction, we need to stop having this idea that in the public sector, quote, looking after our interests is instead, you know, well, they tried it, but their intentions were there. Intentions don't mean shit. Intentions are nothing. It is the results. If you had a private company and they made a mistake. You don't say, and it ruins your product. You don't tell them, well, you know, you tried your best. It's okay. I mean, you have a lot of stuff on your plate. You say, no, you owe me this product. I bought it in a voluntary exchange, and you owe me what you promised. That's a fundamental difference. We have to hold them to equal standards. If we're going to hide the private sector to such a high standard, we must apply the same standard and perspective to government. Six, is government inherently evil? Of course not. Again, this is the same question as the antithesis of liberty. It can be, but no, in itself, it's not. I mean, again, government cannot be anything. It cannot be personified. It's just a group of individuals. Can a group of individuals act using the monopoly of force and be evil? Of course, but a government in itself cannot, because a government cannot possess traits. Number seven, sometimes to protect the greater liberty, you have to do things like form an army or gather a group together to build a wall or levee. Again, if you listen to the wording, I love the sophistic wording that they use in here. To protect the greater liberty, you have to do things like form an army, gather, together build a wall. Those are voluntary words. If you wanted to actually be realistic, you would say, sometimes to protect the greater liberty, you have to do things like force an army upon the citizens, steal and steal taxes from the society to build a wall or levy. All of this stuff can happen voluntarily, and that's how it should happen. And yes, all of these things can happen and should be voluntary. That's the entire point of anarcho-capitalism. It's voluntary. So yes, all of these things should be done, and no, it should not be forced, and to believe that this is voluntary is completely dangerous and an idiotic statement to make. Number nine, as soon as you've built an army, you have now said that the government isn't always inherently evil, because we need it to help us sometimes. So now, it's that old joke, would you sleep with me for $1 million? How about a dollar? Who do you think I am? Well, we've already decided who you are. Now we are just negotiating. Two false pretenses to start off. I mean, as soon as you vote an army, you now say the government isn't always inherently evil. And he's assuming that we said, yes, government is inherently evil. And it's a basic fundamental misunderstanding of libertarianism. Once you use the base of your question off of falsity and a fallacy about libertarian philosophy, you were completely wrong. So I can't even address that question, because he's having a false pretense about libertarian philosophy, and he clearly does not understand. I mean, that's obvious. He's so confident that you would answer, yes, government is inherently evil, that he would start the basis and foundation of a question off of that. It's completely naive. Number nine, you say government governs least governs best, but that was the Articles of Confederation. We tried that for 8 years, and it didn't work, and we went into the Constitution. The problem here, and I have to agree with Stefan Molyneux on this, is that it doesn't matter how big the government is. It doesn't matter how much force or how many times you're raped. It's still rape. It's still violence. It's still immoral. And we cannot allow it. As a quick empirical point, the Articles of Confederation did not decrease the strength of government. It did decrease the strength of the federal government, but all it did was transfer that power into the states. So we had 50 strong state governments and a weak federal government. I mean, it's just a multitude of more problems. And then the biggest problems you read in your history textbooks, as I'm familiar with, because I come from the death traps of... I go to a private school, which kind of isn't as bad, but I still get a healthy taste of propaganda. So, the main problem is, there wasn't a uniform set of money, right? And it's all about being uniform, being consistent. And while consistency is great in the philosophical world, it is not a necessity in the free market, because the medium of exchange in a society is determined, if it's free, by the choices they make. And it's if a state, in this case, chose a different medium of exchange than, you know, their neighboring state, I mean, they thought that was in their best interest. There was no force there. We've always had various other ones. We've used salt before. You know, we've used various other gold, obviously, just precious metals. We've used various other forms of money in the previous human history. And to say that we need all one uniform of money would it have gotten to that point if you gave the Articles of Confederation time? I don't know. It would be more likely, but I mean, you still had the strong state governments that could interfere with that. If the government can interfere with what you choose with money system or not, then of course you cannot. You're blaming, the rape victim for being raped. You cannot blame. You cannot use the solution as government because of a product created by government. It makes no sense whatsoever. 10, you give money to the IRS because you think they're going to hire a bunch of people, that if your house catches on fire, we will come there with water. Who told John Stewart that we give money voluntarily to the IRS? Last time I checked, there is a gun pointed at my head when I have to pay taxes in the spring, and I don't have a choice. If I do not pay them, I will either be imprisoned or killed. If it goes far enough, if they come to my property because I prevent them from stealing from me, and then I'd have the audacity to protect my property once they arrive at my property, I could be shot. So no, I don't technically view that as giving my money away. I'm not generous, as Stefano Molyneux also said, I'm not generous to my thief. It's a complete contradiction. So, again, it's not voluntary. We have to get away of believing that these things are voluntary, because they're not. There is no social contract. I did not sign anything. The only social contracts are contracts. There are no abstract terms of things we all abide to. And if we do, they're voluntary, not coercive. Number 11, why is it that libertarians trust the corporation in certain manners more than they trust representatives that are accountable to voters? The idea that I would give up my liberty to an insurance company as opposed to my representative seems insane. Again, who said that that representatives are accountable? Oh my God. Who said the representatives are accountable to their voters? They're not. There is no possible way that they are accountable to our voters. If you believe that a representative is accountable to you, in what are you applying the same standard as you would to a private company? Is that just the where you found to be comfortable in your view of government? You have such low standards for the state that you determine them possibly one time doing something that you partially agree with as supporting you and being accountable. And as far as the corporation, in a libertarian and anarcho-capitalist society, number one, monopolies would not exist for very long. If they did, they would strictly be because of a voluntary interaction. And same thing with corporations. Corporations have risk. Governments can do whatever they want, and they will still get taxes. Corporations can't do whatever they want. If they started, you know, posting, if Apple decided to start posting pictures on billboards about them killing children to make iPhones in Uganda, there would be a pretty big hit to the profit margin. But why? Because they have risk. There's incentives to provide the customer with what they want. So in a libertarian society, corporations are voluntary. A state, again, is coercive. It's like, I know it's like a broken record, but I mean, that's the fundamental point of all of this. Number 12, why is it that with competition, we have such difficulty with our healthcare system? And there are choices with the educational system. Okay. Can we just throw away the last sentence? There are choices in the educational system. That's like saying, again, that the rapist says, I can rape you, you know, one way or another way. There's a pretense, a false pretense of choice, but there's no choice. You don't have a choice to it not happen. You don't have a choice to not send your kids to a public run or at least a government approved school. I mean, there is no choice. Come on. That's so naive. It's ridiculous. And why is it that with competition, we have such difficulty in our healthcare system? Because healthcare is difficult. People are going to make choices in life. And some people will die without healthcare insurance because they chose not to. It's fine. It's going to happen. Choices are made and there are consequences. But that is the risk we take to make choices. If we believe that choices could not exist because of the possible negative effects, we'd all hide under our beds throughout the day because if we dared to get in our car and drive to work, heaven forbid, we could get hit by someone who's, you know, just a drunk driver or whoever it may be, no fault of our own, and possibly die. Did we do anything to deserve that? No, but we make choices. There is risk. And the risk is what creates prosperity. If there was no risk, there would be no incentive to everyone would, you know, do the same. They wouldn't, everyone would have invested in Apple when IBM was completely destroying them in the first years. The thing is, there is risk. And the ability to have risk allows for profits to be humongous. I know that's very technical, the technical diction we use here. It's immensely larger when you have risk because people can, you know, a very minute majority or a percentage of the population will actually take on that risk. But risk is going to equal reward, and we have to allow risk in society. So yes, there will be problems with the healthcare system, as always, but the goal is to make it affordable for the most people with the best possible packages they can have. And obviously, I don't want to get into, I can get into that a whole other show of anarchist healthcare. But it is created by the free market. Would you go back? Oh, sorry, number 13. Would you go back to 1890? I mean, this is the generic. You know, this is exactly. Would you go back to segregation? Of course not. I would go back to the law and the freedom of 1890 because we were a hell of a lot freer to do what we pleased back then. You know, no income tax, at least until after Lincoln got out. No income tax, no Federal Reserve. There was a lot of actually free market tendencies in the American economy that we do not have now. So yes, I would go back, obviously not to the circumstances, but definitely the standards. Number 14, if we didn't have a government, we would be all in hovercrafts and no one would have cancer and broccoli would be ice cream. Possibly the most factual question you could ask. Of course we would have, I mean, if we abolished the federal government tomorrow, broccoli would be non-existent. It would all turn into ice cream, and that's my always answer to who would build the roads, my roads. I always say we don't need roads where we're going, because it's the same kind of deal as you know, these movies that we hear about where where the aliens come in and they inflict war. If the aliens had the capital incentive and the amount of savings to create that kind of technology, there is no way that a government still existed, and therefore there would be no more war. At least, you know, broad-scale war, as far as these movies are concerned. So, of course, there'd be a lot of greater prosperity under an anarchist system. 15, unregulated markets have been tried. The 80s and 90s were the robber baron age. These regulations didn't come out of an interest in restricting liberty. What they did is come out of an interest in helping those that had been victimized by a system that couldn't fight back against. This is one of the most juiciest topics for a libertarian to just dismantle the 7th grade textbook version of the early 20th century and late 19th century. As far as the robber baron ages goes, you know, it goes that there were monopolists that ran around and put in horrible standards and just collected all the money. And especially, you know, you have Rockefeller, Carnegie, Vanderbilt, all those names come out about these evil people. And I just want to give a quick history lesson to these imbeciles, statists. First off, all three of those men that I just mentioned severely lowered prices, severely, and especially Vanderbilt fought against state-enforced monopoly. First off, let me start with Rockefeller. Rockefeller was in the kerosene business, and beforehand, before he came along, all lighting was used by or was lighted by whale blubber, right? Whale oil. And that was extremely expensive, so most people didn't have lighting. They would go to bed very early because they didn't have light. So it was a very cumbersome problem as far as that good was concerned. And then Rockefeller came in and used his genius to lower prices in the kerosene industry by 90%. A 90% drop by the time he was done with kerosene, which, you know, anything that anyone used for light to make was instantly cheaper, along with people being able to stay up. I mean, it's a benefactor. We cannot hate someone for lowering their price greatly to get such a great control of the industry. I mean, it's a voluntary interaction. If everyone wants to give their money to this guy, it's because he's fulfilling the needs of the public the best, and that's what's going to happen. You cannot confuse innovation with monopolism. It's just a simple problem. As far as Carnegie goes, he was in the steel industry, and he again lowered prices by 90%. The same exact story that Rockefeller had. And then my favorite is Vanderbilt. Vanderbilt, before he got into the railroad industry, was in the steamboat industry, and he fought against the state of New York's monopoly with Robert Fulton, who was, had restriction on who could go across from New York to New Jersey and vice versa. Vanderbilt defied that monopoly and lowered the prices to a point where he gave boat rides across the river for free and said, you know, I hope you can, if you're hungry, you can eat some food or buy some minor food because I'm a great cook. And that's how he made some money. I mean, he gave millions of new people, obviously not millions, but a great amount of new people, this ability to go across this river for insanely cheap and at some point free. So we cannot hate him. Later on in his life, he went into the railroad industry and fought against, again, the Northwestern railroad monopoly. And he once again lowered prices drastically. And his mail service that went across the railroads for people to deliver mail delivery dramatically decreased in price. And he allowed so many more people to come in. So these guys all lower prices. These, quote, robber barons were benefactors to humanity. And, of course, if you have not read any more, if you want to know more about this, go see the great historian Tom Woods. He is probably one of the best, if not the best, libertarian historian that I know. Him and Tom DiLorenzo are the top guys as far as I am concerned. So go read his work and look into his resources. And he has a ton of stuff on that. Number 16. Why do you think workers that worked in mines unionized? I mean, is that a question? Because their conditions sucked. They had terrible conditions. But I mean, it wasn't the lack of regulation. It was just that the conditions, the ways of producing and extracting the ore was very prehistoric. So it was very filthy. So they had a right to unionize. The question is, can that union then be forced or force other workers and beat up other workers for trying to get their job for a lower price? No, you cannot inflict force. That's the problem libertarians have with unions, because they have special privileges that can deny other workers the job for a lower price. And if it's working for a lower price, the price of all the cost of production goes down. Therefore, the price can be lowered in competition for the consumer to good. Therefore, the people who are in the union will actually get that product for a little bit less than if they were so selfish to artificially raise their wages above market clearing prices. So, yeah, unions are perfectly fine as long as they are not using force, and they are voluntary, and they cannot force others from not taking that job if they believe that if they're not willing to work for such a, quote, low wage, then allow someone else to do it for that low wage. It's just competition. Number 17, without the government, there are no labor unions, because they would be smashed by Pinkerton agencies or people hired or sometimes even the government. What labor unions are you talking about? Labor unions are fine. The government, again, for the most of our history, sided with employers. So the government wasn't just this automatic, savior of the worker, the working class. I mean, the government, if anyone, has destroyed more working men's lives than any other system or any other institution. I mean, as far as, we can talk about child labor laws, the government has destroyed people's lives far more than someone who offered a child a job because the family needed work. And yeah, were they working 20-hour days? But I mean, that was the only way they could produce that for the demand. And it was, there was no one forcing the child to do that. It was the times. And the only way to get out of that we don't need the children to work anymore, is because of capital investment and growth in the capital structure. So, labor unions would not be in existence in your mind, as far as they cannot force others to not take the job. They cannot beat up other scabs, scabs as they call them, for taking their jobs. They cannot do that. It is immoral, and it's against libertarian philosophy. Number 18, would the free market have desegregated restaurants in the South, or would the free market have done away with miscegenation? I can't pronounce right now. If it had been allowed to, would Martin Luther King have been less effective than the free market? Those laws sprung up out of the majority sense of, at that time, that blacks should not. The free market there would not have supported integrated lunch counters. Exactly. The laws that sprung out of this time that blacks should not. That's democracy. That's the problem with democracy. Majority rules. An entire group, it could be 51%, says that we should have slavery. And guess what? 49% have to have slaves, right? Or they cannot outlaw slavery in their communities. So that is a problem in itself. So you cannot be justifying democracy for solving this problem when you're saying democracy is what caused it. You cannot be that contradictory. And of course, the free market discourages discrimination because it's unprofitable. The same thing with slavery in the long run. And if you want to know more about that, you can obviously read the quickest rebuttal of that was probably Robert Murphy's The Politically Incorrect Guide to Capitalism. You could read that. That has a chapter on the desegregation and the morality of capitalism and the free market. So, the same thing with slavery. I mean, the same thing with businesses. If the majority of businesses, if they want to be prejudiced and hire, and what discrimination means, right? It doesn't mean that you just hire all whites. It's that you're hiring someone that is less profitable, over because of certain beliefs you have about their appearance or, you know, lifestyle. So if there's a black person and a white person, and the white person does a better job than the black person, you're not racist for hiring them, but you are racist for hiring them. If the black person is a more profitable and a better worker than the white person, and you still hire the white person. But the problem with that is that someone is going to pay for that lack in act in the lack of production, and that is in the form of prices. People are going to be paying more for a service that they want. If people want whites to be in their stores and they're serving them food, then they're going to pay more, because if the white is less capable of doing it, it's going to cost more of the company because their productivity is down. They're missing that extra productivity that could have lowered prices. So they're going to pay more for that. And as far as a moral level, who says that you should force someone to be with another group if they don't want to? Is it not their property? Do they not own their businesses? If I want to have my white friends over or my black friends over, is that evidently just it has to be outlawed? No. Why? Because it's my house. I can do what I want. The same rule applies with businesses. It is their property. You cannot inflict force on someone else's property. They own themselves. They own their property. And you cannot take that away from them. It's completely immoral. You cannot do so. Last one, number 19. Government is necessary but must be held accountable for its decisions. Government cannot be held accountable for its decisions. If it was, the last 100 years we would have abolished the government, because it is not accountable. What did the federal income tax start at, what, 1 or 2%? Look what it is now. They are over and over and over again not held accountable. Why? Because they are not accountable to voters. They are accountable to special interest groups. That is why we cannot have a state. Because they are not accountable to us whatsoever. And it is not necessary. We can do this voluntarily without the initiation of force. If people want to gather together and live under certain rules that they believe will be safer, if they want to have a social safety net, they can. As long as they don't force the guy across the street or across the highway, because yes, there will be highways in an anarcho-capitalist society, believe it or not, to be in their group. That is fine as long as it is voluntary. Voluntary action is the essence of libertarianism. And we have to get away as much as possible and as quickly as possible from the evil that is coercion. All right, guys, that is my 19 questions. I hope you enjoyed this first podcast. And if you do, I would please ask you to subscribe. I will be giving these out. I don't know my exact frequency yet. I'm still getting into it, so I would hope that you guys will stick with me as much as possible in this early on, and just deal with the rough patches that I have starting off here. It's going to take me a couple days or maybe a week or two to get used to the formatting and the etiquette of podcasting, but I ask that you stay with me and we can have some great discussions on philosophy and economics and political philosophy. So thank you for listening, guys. I appreciate it so much. Bye for now.